Thanks, Peter. My name's Herb, and I'm a sober alcoholic. Through the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to say that since November of 1962. And in all those years, I have to tell you that I've never found a reason to pick up a drink of alcohol. There were a lot of excuses out there I could have used to go get drunk. You know, the war, or the starving children, or the boss, or there were a whole lot of reasons I could have used to go out there and pick up that drink. But one of the first things I ever learned when I came into AA was a person who became my sponsor told me that before I picked up a drink, to sit down and figure out if that drink would improve the situation in any way, shape, or manner. And any time I ever thought that it might be a good excuse to pick up a drink, I looked at it and said, how is this going to help the situation? And it wouldn't have. And therefore, I probably didn't pick up a drink. That was one of the reasons I didn't pick up a drink. There are a lot of them, which I will probably cover a few more tonight. But I'm real glad to be here. This is kind of one of my home groups. And I've been coming to Central Group since it was down yonder where the county building is now. And I remember to move up here and... first meeting I ever went to when I moved to Florida in 1978, I think it was Central. So I've been pretty comfortable coming here for a long time. And I feel, and I guess I'm a little prejudiced about it, but I feel that these new meetings here in Central are some of the best meetings in the Central Florida area. We've got some real good sobriety comes in here at these new meetings, and I'm always comfortable when I come here, and I always take something away that I learned. We get up here, we're supposed to tell how it was and what happened and what it's like now, and I can tell you how it was not very good. I'm one of the people who started drinking alcoholically the first time I ever drank, and I continued to drink alcoholically until I was in the gutter. And I had a lot of bad times drinking because I was... a troublesome drunk. My personality changed. At least I hope it changed from a nice person to a real SOB when I drank. And I always got in trouble when I drank. I always ended up in jail. I ended up in prison. I always ended up in some kind of trouble when I drank. Eventually, it might not be the first, but any time I'd start drinking, it would always seem to end up in trouble. And my life deteriorated to a point where I was unwanted by anybody around me, and I was particularly unwanted by myself. I was not a happy camper. And one morning in 1962, I was living down the Virgin Islands, and one morning I woke up in a gutter in Frederickstad, and a pig was pushing me out of the way to get something to eat. And I kind of saw, I think God visited me that day, because I kind of saw that in the next couple of months I might be dead if I kept this, this wonderful way of life up. And at that time, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I think maybe I'd heard of them, but it wasn't, the programs and all weren't around like they are today, and there really wasn't a lot of knowledge, particularly in the Virgin Islands, as I was going to find out. But I knew that if I continued on that route, I would probably be dead in a very short period of time. And I was really too young to die at that age. I think it was about 26, 28, something like that. And I really didn't want to die, and I really didn't want to die drunk. And I had that clarity of vision. And another thing was that I had heard that there was a doctor who took care of drunks down on the island there. And I had a pickup truck, and I found the truck, and I drove over there and tried to get in the office, and they wouldn't see me. Of course, I hadn't had a bath in about 5 days, and I'd thrown up all over myself, and, usually drunk out there, really clean and spiffy, and they didn't want me in the office at all. So she came out and talked to me and asked me what I wanted to talk to her about. I said, I understand you take care of drunks. She says, I don't, but I know somebody does. And she wouldn't let me drive. And she put me in the back of her car and took me over to see a guy, and he wouldn't let me in his house. And I remember the first thing I had was Jimmy said, I'll talk to you, but I want you to stand out here and take your clothes off. There's nobody out at home. He lived kind of up on the hill, and he hosed me down with a garden hose. And I got clean. But I was pretty raunchy. And then he gave me some shorts and a t-shirt to put on, and we got talking. And one of the first things he told me, he said, well, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, yeah, Now, here's a guy who's about a lot older than me at that time. He was probably about 65 or so. And I said, yeah. So he told me his story. I said, well, maybe he is an alcoholic. And he said, well, I've been sober 7 years now. And that stuck in my mind. I said, well, I know I can stay sober 7 years, so I think I'll give that a try. And, you know, that was my biggest goal for a long time, was to make 7 years sobriety, because he had 7 years. Well, I never caught up with him because Ray still got 7 more years sobriety than me. And he lives out in Baltimore, and I still call him on a fairly regular basis when I need to talk to somebody. But anyhow, we talked, and he really laid it on to me on what I needed to do. The first thing he told me, don't drink. And he said, you know, I want to tell you something. He said, if you don't drink, alcohol will no longer be a problem in your life. And, you know, I never realized that to that point. And I mean, that was like the greatest shining light that I ever heard. If I didn't drink it, it wouldn't hurt me anymore. And, you know, I mean, I just couldn't believe that. That was such a simple solution. And the other thing he told me was that if I ever drank again, I would die. You know, I didn't know what a slip was until I moved to the States a year later. I never heard of it. He told me, if you drink again, you're going to die. So I always knew that if I picked up a drink again, I was going to die. That was it. I mean, I was really indoctrinated on to dying quick. And I found out why I hadn't heard much about AA in St. Croix, because he and a guy named John were the only two people in AA on St. Croix at that time. And we had meetings, and we did 12-step work. I used to 12-step everybody, and I'd get them in a hospital and 12-step them. And one of the things that happened, nobody stayed sober. I'd go out and give them this wonderful wisdom, and they would get drunk. And I used to complain and say, well, you know, hey, I'm not doing any good. He says, you're staying sober, right? Jim kept telling me, well, you're staying sober, so it's working for you. Don't worry about it. And I managed to keep staying sober. Another thing he told me early on, I'd probably been sober a month, and I was very unhappy, you know, about my sobriety, because, you know, my life hadn't dramatically changed around, and people still know I was a miserable son of a bitch, and they didn't want much to do with me. And I mean, you know, I was, you know, really unhappy, because, you know, I was a new person, bright and shiny sober, and spreading the word to everybody who listened on the island, and nobody liked me. They still didn't like me, you know. They still hated me, in fact, a lot of them. So I had to start making amends to people, and that was hard. And the other thing that he told me right then was, you know, I want you to get down on your knees and ask God for a day sobriety. First thing God did, he said, get on your knees and ask God for a day sobriety. And that went on for about 6 months. I came back and said, you know, I don't like this. And he said, well, it's working, isn't it? And I said, well, really, it is. He said, well, keep doing it, and it'll keep working. So I've been doing it for about 33 years now, and it's still working. So, you know, I know God hasn't let me down all this time, and it's kind of nice to know. But there was one thing that happened in my life at that time that has impressed me, and I think it's one of the things that's kept me sober sometimes when nothing else did, besides, of course, God, but it was something that I had to look at, too. And that was, I twelve-stepped a guy, and his name was, Emerson, I think. I can't remember now. But anyhow, he had the ideal life. He was married to a wealthy woman who owned the liquor store, and I thought that was a great life. And, but the thing was, he could never stay sober. The guy would stay sober 2 weeks, and he'd get drunk 2 weeks, and he was a pretty bad drunk, too. He ended up in a hospital. In fact, I was in the hospital with him when he died of acute alcoholism. But his wife asked me to be a pallbearer at his funeral, and I was, and when we buried him, somebody had said, you know, they were talking, everybody was kind of just standing around talking, they said, you know, he was really a real nice guy, except he was such a drunk, when he was so miserable when he was a drunk. And it's too bad he had a guy, I guess he was about 40 years old, he said, you know, he's so young to die, you know something? His wife and his kids are really better off without him. And, you know, I thought, here's a guy who's been 43 years on this earth, and that's his epitaph. They're better off without him. And that kept me sober sometimes, I think, when nothing else did, because I don't want to die and have my epitaph be the world's better off without me. I want somebody to miss me out there, you know, say, he was a good old boy. We're glad he was around, and we're sorry to see him go. But I know that if I pick up that first drink, that's going to be my epitaph, because I'll go right back
and be just what I was if I hadn't quit drinking all those years ago, because this is a progressive fatal disease. And I won't pick up where I left off. I'll pick up where if I hadn't ever left off, I'd pick up in the gutter and I'd be dead within about 30 days. I know that for sure, because I've seen too many people in long-term sobriety get drunk and they have a real hard time with it. And it's what I told Peter. You know, the first day of sobriety is a gift of God. It really is. Every other day that I've been sober, I've worked for that sobriety. I really have. I've worked for it by following this program the best I can every single day, one day at a time. And I don't think God would give me that day of sobriety again, that first day ever again. I think that gift is only given once. And I mean, that's my opinion. Other people have slipped in that and maybe disagree with me, but that's my opinion. But for me, I don't think I'd ever get that gift back. I don't think I could get sober again if I drank. So to me, the program is not you know, something I do because it makes me feel good. To me, the program is a way of life that I have to lead to live. Because if I don't lead this way of life, I'm going to die. And I know it. And it's not going to be fun. It's going to be a miserable, stinking way to go. Because I don't want to die drunk. The progress down in the AA program, I hadn't moved back in the States from the islands. I felt that it would be better. Had some young children at the time. I thought I needed to move back to the States. And I moved back to the States and became quite active in AA up in Baltimore. And had a group there. And they had some real good hardcore AA in Baltimore. It was real hardcore. There were a lot of Irish people there, so everybody in the program was Irish. But I used to call it the Irish Virus. I don't know if the old timers around here heard that before, but that used to be every drunk, you know, if you were an alcoholic, they said you had the Irish Virus back in Baltimore. And we really had what I felt was the kind of AA that I needed at that time. Very hardcore, no nonsense type of program. And there were two people that I heard speak in those days, in my early part of the program when I was still very new at it, and one of them was Father Martin, came to our group and gave us a chalk talk in person, and that totally impressed me. I mean, that just blew my socks off, and that gave me a real good understanding of what I was about a lot, and what was kind of pushing my buttons and things as far as the alcohol went, and it made me have a lot better understanding of myself, and it helped me other times to figure out things I needed to do when I needed to do them. And another person I heard that impressed me at that time was Charlie, the Arkansas Traveler, came to our group and spoke once down there. And that was very, very impressive. And the funny thing was, when I came back to Florida, one of the first speaker meetings I went to in Daytona Beach, he was a speaker, and I didn't even realize he lived in Florida at that time. And then when I came to Orlando, I figured found he lived over here. But that is kind of one of the things, like, you know, when your paths are funny and they lead to different places. And it was funny that we'd met again after all these years. And I mean, he really impressed me early on when he spoke. When, you know, I look back on the program, and one of the things I ask myself, I wonder how I stayed sober the first 5 years, and then I wonder how I stayed sober the next 10 years and that, because, you know, my life keeps getting so much better, and the things about AA work so well that looking back in retrospect, I say, gee, man, I was really screwed up those first few years when I was in the program, and things are better now. And then I look back a few years later and say, wow, I was really screwed up in the last couple of years, but things are better now. And the program just keeps getting better. My life keeps getting better as I stay sober. And I found out through that not only is alcoholism progressive, but sobriety is progressive. But what has taken me to stay sober is a lot of hard work. I have to really work at this program. I have to do it the best I can on a daily basis. I have to follow the steps and follow the traditions strongly in my life. Because if I don't do that, I find that I start slipping back into the old habits and the old ways of thinking. And then I have to start getting back on my program again and start, you know, working the program. And I don't have a problem with saying it takes work. I know a lot of people say, oh, don't say that because people get scared. They got to do something when they get here. Well, yeah, let them get scared, but they don't do it and run out and get drunk. I mean, I know because I see it happen. So I feel that the effort that I put in is in direct, or my sobriety is in direct proportion to the effort I put in that program that day. Because the effort I put into AA today is only good for today. It doesn't take care of tomorrow's sobriety. I have to do it on a daily basis. And I find that today, when I don't do it on a daily basis, that what happens is that my life starts getting screwed up again. And I don't know why, but all of a sudden I say, well, gee, I haven't been meeting in a while. And lately I've been pretty pat about getting to meet. I've had a lot of things going on in my life, and I really haven't been doing the meetings I should be doing. And I can see that my life is not as good when I'm not making constant contact with AA through the meetings and through people like Peter and Tom and some of the people I know out here, and give them a call and be there. You know, I forget to call these people and say, how are you doing that? Life gets too busy. And I have to remember, I've got to keep bringing it back. Even though I'm not going to pick up a drink or anything, I still have to bring it back to keep in to my AA roots, because I feel that's what it really is, it's AA roots. One of the things when I know we have some people here who are not, that maybe got sober someplace else and moved to Orlando, because we have a lot of people moved to Orlando from other places. And I found one of the things when I moved from the Virgin Islands to Baltimore, I knew people in Baltimore. The reason I moved to Baltimore from St. Croix was because Jim came from that area, and two people who meant a lot to me early in the program had come down and visit, and they were from Baltimore. So when I moved back to the States, I moved to Baltimore because I knew AA was in Baltimore, and I knew AA worked in Baltimore because these people were real sober people. I got into Baltimore, and I really fit into the program. Like I said earlier, you know, that was my kind of AA, because I grew up with Jim in my first year, and he influenced me, and that was the way he talked. It was that hardcore stuff, and boy, I fit right in there. Well, I got transferred. I was working for a company. I got transferred to New Jersey. I got New Jersey. They didn't do it the same way up there, man. AA was not right in New Jersey. They did everything different. They really didn't know what they were doing in New Jersey. I mean, these people, I don't know how they stayed sober. They were so screwed up there. They didn't do anything like it in Baltimore. We had all speakers meetings in Baltimore. There they had lead meetings. And people come up, and two or three people would lead the meeting. I didn't get a chance to talk at all. You know, they did all the talking. That really, you know, that was terrible. And they just didn't know what they were doing there. And I kind of didn't like it much, so instead of saying, well, this is the way it's done here, I better start, you know, doing this, I kind of didn't go as often. And I moved up to Pennsylvania, and they were screwed up in Pennsylvania, and I kind of didn't go as much there either. You know, I mean, it was in my coming, you know, so. And then I moved up to New York, and I didn't go at all in New York. And I had been to a meeting in about a year when I was up in New York. And Jim had moved back to the States from St. Croix, and I had got a call from him one day. And he said, Jimmy, he said, you know, I've got this great group down here. He's telling me I'm going to meetings every, you know, all these meetings. He says, how many meetings you been to lately? I said, not very many. He says, I didn't ask you how. He says, how many? I said, well, not very many. He said, last month, how many have you been to? I said, none. He said, well, we better get to a meeting. I said, yeah, yeah. And he said, well, I want to tell you. He said, you remember Jimmy. And Jimmy Dean was a lady who had visited St. Croix, who was very influential in me moving to Baltimore, because he was a gal that had some of the greatest sobriety I ever knew. I mean, this woman was hardcore, AA. And he told me, well, he said, I hate to tell you this, but Jimmy just died 2 days ago. He said, that's one reason I'm calling you. I said, oh, what happened? And he said, well, she got drunk. I said, you're kidding me. She couldn't have died. He said, yeah, she did. He said, she got a job there working in a treatment center and started wearing two hats, and she forgot that she was in the program. She thought she became a counselor instead of a drunk, and she forgot she was a drunk, and the only reason she'd go to meetings was to impress people. And so she picked up a drink, and in 6 months she was dead, and she was dead, died drunk. And that was a big shock to me, and that night I was back to an AA meeting, because I figured that was, I was getting told real quick that I had better get to a meeting. So one of the things since that time, I've tried not to stray away from the meetings and the roots, because I know that I don't care how long that I've been sober, I forget the basic stuff. I forget the simple things. Unless I come back and get told what they are, they seem to get out. That's where this alcoholism is coming back in an insidious disease. I mean, it's coming back and powerful and very insidious because it's easy to forget the pain. It's easy to forget the things that make us what we want to be, and it's easy to fall back into the old rut and end up where we don't want to be. And I know that's for me. Another thing that happened when I got here in Orlando, very, very good, was quite active in AA over at the Friendship Group. I was married to Yvonne, some of you were here know her then. And we started, she was also in the program, we started over there in Friendship, Central and Friendship, but we lived in that end of the town, so we went to Friendship a lot, and became very active in there, and found out that, hey, they do it right. All I have to do, you know, here in Orlando, they did it right, but I came in with a whole lot of different attitude when I got to Orlando than I had when I got into some other places, and they did it all wrong. So, to me, coming in and getting right involved with AA was a real good thing, and it helped my life a lot. And I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? But anyhow, I got to meet a lot of people and got had some very good contacts with a lot of people that kept me on the right track. And one of the things that happened, I mean, this is another type that, like, we can't see ourselves a lot, but I went and got involved in business with another guy that was in the program at the time. He was a pretty decent guy and everything, but our relationship in business fell apart. And because of that, I really got to hating this guy. And if I found he was at a meeting, I wouldn't go to the same meeting. We were in the same church, and I quit the church. And I really got to hating this guy. And I carried a resentment about this guy for about a year, you know? And I was a real miserable, because I was still going to meet anything, but I was carrying this resentment in here. And I didn't know why my life was getting so rotten. And I was really having a hard time with life. So one day, I was down and went into a church down in South Orlando I'd never been in before. I said, I want to talk to the minister. And I sat down and talked to him. And I said, here's what happened. I told him this whole story. He says, oh, that's easy. He said, you got a resentment. I said, of course I got a resentment. I know I got a resentment. He said, well, you got to face the guy and tell him that you love him, and you got a resentment, and you're giving it to him because you don't want it anymore. I said, you're kidding me. I said, you know, I know that. What did I come in here for? And so I had to go do that, and that was a hard thing to do. But you know what I did? The resentment went away. And it was a funny thing, but, you know, that's how this program works. It keeps coming back to me and reminding me what I have to do to stay sober, and not only stay sober, but to lead a life that is a joy. And we used to have a fellow come around here a lot that I can't remember his name now, slipped, happy, joyous, and free. And that was one of those things. He said, I'm happy, joyous, and free. That any time he spoke, he said, always would say that, I'm happy, joyous, and free since I've been in the program. And I think that's what AA is all about. We're happy, joyous, and free. And if I wasn't happy and I didn't enjoy my sobriety, I know I'd get drunk. I mean, if sobriety wasn't better to me than drinking, I'd be drinking. I mean, let's face it. There's no sense staying sober if it's not a good life staying sober. But just not drinking in the beginning was fine. You know, just not drinking made my life better. Nobody's locked me up since I quit drinking. You know, I mean, I've not been in jail since I quit drinking. In fact, I haven't even been cop hassling me since I quit drinking. So that part of my life got better. You know, I haven't thrown up all over myself. I haven't abused people. There are a lot of things I haven't done since just by quitting drinking, my life got better. But then that wasn't enough. And then I had to start working on the program so that the rest of my life got better. And it never stopped, because what's good enough for today will not be good enough tomorrow or a few days down the road. Like I mentioned earlier, I look back on my life after I've been sober 6 or 7 years and say, I wonder how I stayed sober in those first few years, because I was really not that great a person. I had a problem when I was drinking. I used to be a thief. Not like a lot of us are, but I was, you know, a thief. And when I got sober, I was a better thief because I was smart enough not to get caught quite as much. I never got caught. That was, I got sober. And one of the things that I said around the program for about 3 years is, I might be a son of a bitch, but I'm a sober son of a bitch. And that was like an epitaph of me. That's all I had to hang on to for a couple, 3 years in the program. But that was enough. I stayed sober. But one day I woke up and said, you know, if I'm going to be a son bitch, I'm going to be a drunk one. So I better start doing some of the stuff it says in these steps and get a little bit better. You know, I played lip service and that. But I really admire somebody and come in here and get their life straightened around about 90 days or a year and a half, and they charge off. Because it took me a long time to get myself really, you know, straightened out. I thought I was doing good, and I was staying sober. That was what counted. And if I hadn't stayed sober, I couldn't have done the rest of the stuff. And that was one of the other things that I found out. I asked Jim when I first got sober, I said, gee, you know, I got all these problems, you know. I mean, everybody that comes in here has problems. I don't think there's anybody that came into this room that woke up in the morning and said, gee, it's a beautiful day, my life's great, I think I'll go down to AA and see if I can do something and get a little bit better. You know, I don't know anybody's ever come in that way. Everybody comes in here sick, sober, and miserable, and this is kind of like the last place they've got to go. They've tried everything else, and this is like the end of the line. And if it isn't, just go out there and drink a while, and it will be. You know, you'll come back, and it'll be the end of the line. And then, I said, you know, all these problems. You know, what am I going to do? And the stock answer was, don't drink, and eventually we'll figure out how to handle it. Now, you think, that's a terrible thing. Why didn't we give me some answers? Well, that was the answer. If I didn't drink, I would figure out how to handle them. And it's still... works, but it isn't for not drinking. Now I have to work the steps on a daily basis to figure out how to handle a problem, because the more sober I got, the worse my problems were. Because the things that didn't used to bother me started bothering me. And I've always been one of those people that said, you know, if it don't itch, don't scratch it. And things I could narrowly get through with 3 or 4 years sobriety. When I had 8 or 10 years, I couldn't do those things anymore. Things I could do when I had 20 years sobriety, I cannot do today. And I think because the sobriety is progressive, our conscience grows too. I think that's one thing. But I think God doesn't give us more conscience than we can handle. I hope He doesn't. You know, because if anybody comes in this program, and I know me, if I'd have come in here and had him turn my life around and do everything right the first 90 days, hell, I'd have went out and got drunk again, because it was impossible. But thank God that I didn't get that conscience, a big conscience right away. The conscience grew as my sobriety grew, and I could handle it. My character defects that didn't bother me, when I got sober enough to handle those character defects, then I recognized them and was able to handle them. And I try to tell anybody that's failing you in a problem, you know, don't try to become a saint in 90 days. Now, don't try to turn your life around all at once, you know. Pick the thing that's bothering you the most and work on that until that's taken care of. And I guarantee you in a couple of years it'll come back anyhow. Because once you get, you know, it's like your problem, your life is a cycle, and things that you handle well back here, all of a sudden they'll crop up again, you're not handling, you got to do it all over again. It keeps us kind of green. You know, because of that cycle of the way our life goes around, and we have to keep coming back and taking care of things. Another thing that I found out in this program is that there are no gurus in AA, and I like that. You know, we don't have any gurus, we don't have any wise men in the program, and I like that. There are a few that try to be, and there are a few that are looked on as such. But this thing to me about AA is one of the greatest things that there is. I can learn as much from a guy off the street 90 days sober or 1 week sober as I can learn off a guy with 35 years sobriety. Not everything will be the same, but I can still learn from that guy as this guy. And people, one thing about the program of AA, by not having gurus and not having big leadership and everything, we're able to function as human beings with each other one-on-one. And, you know, nobody is out there is like, this person has all the answers. So I'm a cave diver. I don't think I'm a cave diver. You're probably not, but I'm a cave diver. And in cave diving, we have very big egos in cave diving. All cave guys got egos that are bigger than this house. And certain people have a certain way of doing things and a certain way of configuring equipment, and this is the only proper way. You know, this is the only way. And these people are gurus of this. And then you got another group that says this is the only way, and they're gurus of this. And then you got another group that's over here, and said, well, this is the only way, and this is, if you do anything else, you're going to die, you know. So they're gurus. We don't have that in this program. And the ones that are gurus, they usually end up either getting drunk or wising up. So, you know, I really, to me, this is the strength of AA, is that we just, book along. We don't have to have any leaderships. We don't have to have a central committee to tell us what to do. And we can come in here, and we're fully self-supporting. And all these things are strength in AA. And sometimes we forget about the traditions and this part of AA that gives us our strength. And if we do that, the thing that happens is that doesn't work. So we go back. Because this program is so pragmatic. The things about this program that work, work. And the things that we try to put in there and add to it, or different slants to it, or try to make it work better, it don't work. And, you know, the proof is real good. The people who are doing it right stay sober, and the people who try to do it the other way don't stay sober. So it's really easy to see, and what is it, 15, 60-some years, we've been doing the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and people who have followed that path have stayed sober and led, you know, productive, sober lives, and the people who haven't have been drinking and dying. So, you know, to me, this is a great thing about the program. You don't have to have some leader telling you or some appointed person telling you, because it's been on the walls here, and when we do it, it works. And to me, that's a great thing. I really, all my life, since I've been sober, I've been real hardcore about this program, because I know my life depends on it. And I'm a firm believer in the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, but I try to live by the steps. I don't do it all the time. Becky's sitting there, and she can tell you, I don't do it a lot of times. There's some times that I'm really bad about doing it, and other times I do it pretty well. But the thing is that I know that if my life's not going well, then I've got to get back on path and start working the steps and doing a better job of it. And the other thing is, nobody has to point to me and tell me, hey, Herb, you're not doing a good job of this. I know it myself, because my life is not the happy, joyous, and free type of life that I want to live. It's not what I want. I'm not happy. But if I'm working the program, then the happiness comes, the comfort comes, the peace of mind comes. But the main thing that comes from working this is the closer contact with God. Because what happens when I don't work the program, my contact with God gets, you know, like further away. And when I'm working the program, my contact with God gets stronger. And I can feel Him working in my life better. So, really what happened to me was that I was a helpless, hopeless person. And I was a real sick person. And by the grace of God, I was found this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and God gave me my first day of sobriety, and He put people in my life who have been able to help me grow in the program. I don't think anybody can grow in the program by themselves. I think we need others to guide us along our way. And that has changed over the years. The people who have come into my life through the program have changed over the years. I've had, like I said, Charlie. There was a Clarence Snyder. If anybody remembers Clarence back a few ago, he was a big influence on me and my, way I looked at the program when I first came into Orlando. And Peter and Lee and some of the other people. Lowell there. Tom. I see the people around the room that have been real strong influence in my life. And it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't have to be somebody sit down there and give me great words of wisdom. It's somebody call me on the phone and say, how are you doing? You know, I've been thinking of you. I love you. You're my friend. Give me a call. You dummy. You're staying away too long. Things like that. And getting that strength from all these people is what has made my life worth living in Alcoholics Anonymous. So what today is a great day. You know, the change in my life was great. It was not dramatic. It took a long time, folks. I worked at this program hard to get it. I wasn't a 90-day wonder. It took me a long time to get to sobriety where I was a comfortable person with my sobriety. But no matter what happened, I didn't pick up the first drink. And that's the main thing. Don't drink, come to meetings, and work on the steps. And that's been my big. A lot of you know me. I keep saying that all the time in meetings and that. But that works for me. And if I find if I do that, then my life gets better, and I don't go out and pick up the first drink. And the other thing that I like to close on is, like I said, I never found, in all the time I've been in AA, I never found a reason to pick up a drink. But also, I look back over of my life of sobriety, and I can honestly say that God ain't screwed me once in 33 years. And, you know, they say we need faith, and I don't really believe. I think faith is good in the beginning, but I think after a while, faith is not the answer, it's belief. You know, faith means believing something without tangible results or without any tangible proof. That's faith. But if you look around the rooms in Alcoholics Anonymous and you see the miracles that are set in these rooms, then you don't need faith anymore. You've got belief. And in my own personal life, I've got belief because I know that God's been with me every time when I needed Him. On the other hand, I found out that God won't do for me anything that I can do for myself. I've got to get up and do it for myself when I'm able to. And what happens is when I get to the point where I can't handle something myself, then God kicks in and does it for me. And because of that, I have a real joyous, happy life today, and I have a sober life. And I'm glad to be standing up here talking to you folks. And you know, somebody says, how do you get to be an old pioneer? Don't drink and don't die. And that's it. Don't drink and don't die. And, you know, it's not that hard. And work the steps and come to the program makes it fun. So, you know, if you don't drink and don't die, you'll stay sober. And you'll be an old timer. If you work the program on a daily basis, you'll be a happy old timer. Thank you.